Ever wonder how a single dent can wipe $1 million off a jet's value? Welcome back to The Truth About the Market. I'm Jason Zilberbrand, president of VREF Aircraft Value Reference, longtime aviation appraiser, and someone who has spent over 3 decades deep inside this industry. I've worked with everyone, from celebrity owners to Fortune 50 flight departments. I've testified as an expert witness in federal litigation, and I've seen more market cycles than I can count. And today we're tackling one of the most misunderstood and one of the most expensive topics in aviation, damage. So if you've ever wondered what really happens to the value of an aircraft after an incident or an accident, whether it's hangar rash, a prop strike, gear up landing, then this episode is for you. Here's the truth. Everybody has an opinion on damage. Manufacturers, banks, brokers, pilots, and especially the internet. The challenge is that many of those opinions just oversimplify something that's actually very complicated and super complex, and some even downplay the effect of damage on a business jet, which can leave an owner or a lender holding the bag. I've seen people suggest that there's a one-size-fits-all formula, like damage equals 25%, or the idea that if you replace a part, it's as though the damage never happened. It sounds easy, but the real world doesn't work that way. And if you rely on an oversimplified opinion, then you can end up making a multi-million dollar mistake, or worse yet, being cross-examined by lawyers who won't accept your valuation. And at the end of the day, the reason we talk about damage is simple. It's because it depreciates the asset and it leaves a stigma. And that stigma is very, very real. So my job is to quantify that loss and help recover it for my clients. And I always tell people I can't make the damage go away. But in virtually every case that I've ever been asked to assist on, I was able to help a client recover what's rightfully theirs. And that's why people call me. Because damage assessment is part science and it's part art. It requires decades of hands-on experience to get it right. I've worked for insurance underwriters, numerous governments, the largest public and private corporations, and even some of the most famous, and for that matter, infamous people in aviation to tackle these issues. And before we dive deeper, I just want to share with you why this topic is so personal for me. So many years ago, I owned an aircraft that was substantially damaged. It was actually going through a maintenance event, and the aircraft was being rolled back into the hangar. And unfortunately, the aircraft didn't clear the hangar doors. So when they lowered the doors, they lowered it on the tail of the airplane, and they did substantial damage to it. It was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Bear in mind, this was a business jet. It was a Lear 45. And the tail damage all of a sudden caused serious issues, right? So all of a sudden I was dealing with inconsistent appraisals. This was all new to me. I had no idea what damaged aircraft really meant, but I quickly found out. Insurance companies delayed. Nobody wanted to talk. I was navigating a super fragmented landscape. There was no data available. And this was just super eye-opening. I realized right then and there that there are many reasons why someone would want to downplay the severity of damage, and on the flip side, why a buyer of a multi-million dollar jet doesn't want to purchase one with damage history. And so it was that ordeal that put me on the path to focus on diminution of value. And I realized if I was facing this super confusing topic and uncertainty, that there were other owners of aircraft out there that were facing it too, and probably lenders and probably insurance underwriters. So when we talk about damage, it's not just as an appraiser or from, you know, my perspective as someone who's testified in court, it's also because I lived it. I know what it feels like to have a major investment suddenly lose value and to be searching for answers that aren't easy to find. And that's why I'm passionate about this subject, and that's why I do what I do today. So Before I dive into the criteria and the war stories, I want to step back and answer the question, why do we care about damage? Why does it matter? So aircraft, like a few other asset types, and if you want to make a comparison, there's a couple asset classes that I like to use that people might be more familiar with. One is the exotic car market, and the other is the vintage instrument market. And so if you apply damage to, let's say, a vintage guitar that's had its neck broken, and that's a really good example to use because it happens a lot. Or another one would be a Ferrari that was in a serious crash and maybe had frame damage. That type of damage is an emotional stigma, right? That stigma makes resale sometimes impossible. In fact, I have a lot of clients that flat out refuse to operate an aircraft again once it has sustained damage. Even if it's been repaired and certified as airworthy, they still flat out refuse to fly it again. And there's a lot of reasons why. Sometimes it's an insurance issue. But more often than not, it's an emotional one. And so I always go back to these other asset classes to help people get more familiar with what it feels like to be facing an acquisition and then find out that there's been a major repair, like a broken neck on a vintage Stratocaster that might be worth $50,000. Would you still pay $50,000 if you found out the neck was broken? Or a $500,000 Ferrari that was cracked up and had repairs and can drive just fine. But, you know, what we really start talking about is pedigree, right? So I want to make sure that people understand right off the bat that diminution of value has nothing to do with airworthiness. If an aircraft has been returned to service, then it is safe to fly. But owners and operators may still refuse to fly it. And there's a lot of facts about how much deduct for damage and how the market environment may exert more control than most people realize. And so as I talk my way through the criteria in the process of appraising a damaged aircraft, keep the scenario in mind. You have two identical planes sitting next to each other on a ramp, same age, same equipment, same condition. One of them has been substantially damaged and repaired and deemed safe to operate. Are they worth the same money? Would you pay the same price for them? That's diminution of value at work. So let's talk about criteria. And the first thing we do when we're assessing damage of an aircraft is we have to understand what type of damage it was. Are we talking about dynamic, meaning the aircraft was in motion and under its own power? Or was it static? Was it at rest or under tow? Right? Because dynamic damage almost always carries a larger deduction because there is a higher chance of major structural damage. Once we can determine the type of damage, that's when we start looking at the methods of repairs. And we look at what was repaired and what parts were used and who performed the work. OEM facilities, factory authorized parts, that's of higher value than repairs made by a second or third tier unauthorized facility. Even when both technically are airworthy, there still seems to be, and this is market talking, this isn't me talking, but the market definitely rewards the person that goes back to the factory to have that kind of damage repaired, or to a leading specialist. For example, if you suffer major damage in a piston aircraft, the name Beagles will probably come up because they are one of the best in repairing major structural damage, especially when it involves other types of materials other than aluminum. Anyway, back to my criteria walkthrough. So after we do the method of repair analysis, then we really look at the work scope and the documentation, right? So we have to know what the buyers and their advisors are looking at, like the paper trail. So are we dealing with missing logbook entries? Are we dealing with what I call a pencil-whipped entry, which is vague or may amplify the stigma because it leads to questions, right? Which then leads to more research. So the internet plays a vital role, as severe incidents or accidents in towns with like local news will often cover these accidents, and they do create a permanent black eye in the aircraft. So when you're looking at an aircraft that's been damaged and you get a logbook entry in front of you and you realize that that logbook entry states that there has been something done to the plane, often a Google search will quickly find out, you know, whether or not that aircraft has been towed off the runway. Or I had one case where it was actually really benign. The aircraft just rolled off the edge of the runway while it was taxiing. Yet it got the attention of a news crew that just happened to be at the airport covering something else. And of course, now this guy's plane is all over the internet being driven by it was like a crane that had lifted it off the ground. So in that type of a case, you know, the images are much worse than what actually happened. And that type of stigma, the internet and the fact that a lot of damaged aircraft do wind up being reported, it can lead to questions from potential buyers, right? So once we deal with those criteria, the next thing we really want to look at is the aircraft itself, right? The year of production, what we're dealing with, how much time is on it, the cycles, the engines, are there engine programs? Was there prior damage? Was there a lot of aircraft in the fleet? Are there very few? Are we dealing with a really niche aircraft to begin with, right? So buyer demand, as well as market strength, it matters. It matters, and it's way more important than I think people realize. And here's why. A strong market with low inventory actually will allow more forgiveness of damage and what it means in terms of dollars, right? Whereas a weak market with a lot of aircraft actually will create a bigger problem for the damage. And it makes sense. If you think about it, more inventory a buyer has to pick through, right? If they find a damaged aircraft, they're probably going to move on because there's so many planes for sale. They'll also be looking for a very large discount, right? And it's the amount that you have to be enticed to purchase that damaged aircraft for, that's what diminution of value is. So that's why I always tell people, you know, hot markets sell bad aircraft. COVID, for example, there was no better opportunity to get rid of a bad airplane because there was so few aircraft for sale. If you really wanted to buy a plane, you had to buy what was out there. And a lot of folks wound up buying damaged goods, even if they'd been repaired, you know. And while there's really no formula for any of this, right, no two cases are alike. Every incident has to be evaluated in its own merits. We do tend to look at, you know, what's measurable. And so let's talk about what's measurable, right? Because there's that science, the data versus the art or buyer psychology. And so the science is the data. The equipment list, the repair invoices, the sales history, the fleet behavior, that's all very measurable, right? What the buyer's psychology is, that's the art, right? And remember what I said earlier, two identical jets, both repaired to OEM standards, both airworthy. One has clean history, the other has a logbook entry showing damage. You can pretty much guarantee every single time which one's going to sell for less money. So remember, the FAA cares about airworthiness. The market cares about perception. And it's that gap between what's technically acceptable and what buyers actually pay for. That's where experience comes in, right? That's when it matters. And that's why an oversimplified or off-the-cuff opinion about damage misses the mark every single time. It doesn't factor in psychology. You're only seeing one part of the picture if you're dealing with someone who's assessing the damage of your aircraft and they don't have the proper experience to do so. So let's talk about some war stories, because I think this is always the, you know, my most favorite thing to do anyway. I love to tell people about the cases that I have dealt with, because I find it fascinating about what can happen to an aircraft. For some odd reason, they tend to be magnets for really crazy accidents. So I'm going to share a couple stories with you. These are real world scenarios. These stuff actually happened. I do between 50 and 60 diminution of value cases a year. They range from, you know, light sport, piston aircraft, all the way to very large business jets, sometimes commercial. And no two incidences are the same. So the ones that I'm going to talk about are unique. and each one's a little bit different. And where I'm going to start is the first one was a Falcon jet. And I'm not going to name names, and I'm going to not even tell you the model of the aircraft to keep the both the innocent and guilty from having to worry about any sort of disclosure. But I had a Falcon jet, large Falcon jet, and it had a value, you know, in the 20s. It was about a $20 million aircraft, and it was struck by a scissors lift during maintenance. By the way, it's fascinating how many aircraft get damaged, either coming into maintenance or coming out of maintenance. It seems to be, and it gets worse every year, but it seems to be a real issue. And I think it's an industry issue, and I would really hope that, you know, it becomes a topic that that more folks start talking about, because it can be really a sad situation when you take an airplane in and expect everything to go well and you get the call that it's been damaged. Everything changes at that point. But I had a Falcon jet, and it went in for heavy maintenance, and it was struck by a scissors lift. It was a very minor event. But that minor event, you know, because of where the scissors lift impacted the aircraft, it did a fair amount of damage. And that damage was about $1 million in lost value, right? And so this was a static incident. And remember what we talked about right at the beginning, static versus dynamic. So this was a static, very, what I would call very common type of incident. It happens all the time. This one just happened to involve a really high dollar aircraft. And so percentages multiply quickly when you're dealing with big dollar amounts, right? And this particular airplane, the owners flat out refused to fly it again, even though it was fixed and repaired, and it did get sold. And I will say too that, you know, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this later, but time does mitigate damage. And I'll explain why as we go through some more stories here. So the next one I had was a CJ3, and what happened was it was being moved into a hangar, and there was a prop aircraft, and it got clipped by the propeller. And so this is another one. This type of stuff happens so often, people don't realize it. And, you know, the CJ3 was it's a pretty strong market. So, you know, this was a pretty minor situation. The aircraft lost a couple $100,000 in damage. But the lesson here is that there's no such thing as damage like that doesn't matter, right? Every recorded incident matters. It leaves a permanent footprint in the logs, in the records, and even in a hot market, people are going to still see it. And so the owner was entitled to recuperate what his loss was. But I like this one because it really shows that, you know, a super hot market, super popular aircraft, there's still going to be that stigma. The next one was also a very crazy situation, but, you know, it happens all the time. You probably see it on the news now more often than not, where aircraft are colliding. Believe it or not, it happens with business jets all the time. Sometimes it's because somebody's walking the wing and not paying attention. Sometimes it's because there's too many aircraft on the ramp. A lot of times it involves, right, negligence. But on this one, I had a Challenger 350. It was parked on the ramp, and a Falcon 2000 taxied right into it. So again, you know, the lesson here is you can do everything right, but it's someone else's mistake. And so you got to repair the plane, and now you've got this perception of damage, and it wasn't your fault. So what do, right? That's what this is all about. This is me helping you get back what's rightfully yours because someone took it from you. This isn't about trying to get money that you're not due, right? And I think there's a lot of people that don't quite understand that, but diminution of value isn't to make you in a better position. It's to make you in a position you were the day before the damage occurred, right? So I've seen it all. I've seen aircraft struck by crop dusters. I've seen snowplows on active runways actually strike aircraft. That one was just absolutely insane. I've had hangar fires, tons of hangar fires. Somebody will be welding in the back of a hangar, boom, all of a sudden it's on fire. Then the hangar next door catches fire. I had a brand new Citation jet delivered, goes on its maiden flight, and got damaged at the FBO while the family was out vacationing. They came back to find their plane was completely destroyed. I've seen it all. I saw the foam suspension systems is another big one. I can't tell you how many times I have got a phone call that a foam suspension system or suppression system has gone off, nobody in the hangar, on a weekend, loaded with aircraft. Tugs misjudging turns. Lots of construction vehicles. Golf carts. I had an aircraft manager, a very small airport, pull up to an FBO, leave his car running. Next thing you know, and this is on video, the truck goes flying. It obviously came out of park somehow, and it goes flying into some guy's airplane. You know, you can't make this stuff up. All of these things, you know, all these cases, they all reinforce one truth. If you own or finance an aircraft, damage can happen at any time, and it can cost far more than the repair itself. The repair is usually just the beginning. You have loss of use. Maybe it's a big airplane that supports a corporation, and now you have to go charter aircraft. Missing logbooks. Let's talk about it. This is another big one. I think it's not damage history, right? It's a pedigree issue. Missing logs or gaps in records is a pedigree issue. And depending on the type of aircraft or how recent those gaps or missing records are, they can be a very big deal, right? Because you don't know if the aircraft had damage. And I think that that's really what as an appraiser or as a purchaser or even an operator of an aircraft, that's why missing logs are so serious, because you don't know what happened during that time. And unfortunately, we all have to go worst case scenario. What if something structural was done and now we don't know about it? So that's the negative. The positive or the flip side is you have to take into account when that missing logbook is from, right? What time frame? If it's a 50-year-old airplane and the missing logbook is from 35 years ago, the chances of it containing anything other than pedigree data or data that you would want for provenance is probably slim and none, because the plane's gone through annuals, it's gone through repairs, it's gone through service. And if there was anything going on with their aircraft, they would have found it. With a business jet, it's a little bit different, right? So they usually can recreate missing logs. There's all sorts of ways that that those records can be recreated. They can't recreate the actual logbook that went missing, but they can through a lot of, you know, talking to service facilities and going through digital maintenance tracking reports, that stuff can be replaced. So I think missing logbooks or missing records, as long as it can be recreated and the aircraft has been flying regularly, even on a business jet, I do think that it can be mitigated to some degree. Again, all of this comes down to what kind of airplane it is, when those logbooks are missing, right? When that gap is, or what those records account for, as well as how much time has passed. Because I think I alluded to it earlier, time really does mitigate damage. It really does mitigate missing records. It's one of those things where, like, you know, if there was a structural repair and nobody said you have to do any sort of special inspection every set, you know, so often by calendar or by hours, that you can assume that there's really nothing wrong structurally with that aircraft. Then to compound that, if it's gone through major scheduled maintenance and they're inspecting all of these areas and they review the records, they're aware of what's been fixed, right? That stuff does get inspected. And if they're not finding anything and there's no reason to believe that that aircraft has a deformity or a weakness, then it's probably as good as when it came out of the shop originally, factory new. However, it doesn't change the fact, and again, I'm going to restate it, right? Diminution of value has nothing to do with airworthiness. One is dealing with safety of flight operations. The other is dealing with the emotion and the stigma or the psychological makeup of trying to sell something that's no longer in the way the factory sold it to you. So I think what you should do if, you know, your aircraft is damaged, first of all, no joke, call me, I'll help you. This isn't about charging fees. This is about getting you in the right direction, whether it's introducing you to an attorney that can help or walking you through the process of what's going to happen, big or small. No joke, I'll help you, call me. Then read your insurance policy. Read it carefully. Don't sign any releases with anybody until you know what the repair costs are going to be, what the time to repair is going to be, and whether or not you're going to need interim lift, right? Hire a lawyer. Get your aircraft appraised by someone who's qualified, someone who's independent, right? And then typically what happens is a demand letter followed by negotiation or legal action if your demands get ignored. That's typically what happens. Your lawyer or you will send a demand letter to whoever damaged the aircraft. Sometimes you'll get your own insurance company involved. It depends on if it's a third party or a first party claim, right? If somebody else damaged your aircraft, you don't want to put that through your insurance. You want to let their insurance pay for it. Why should you be subject to increased premiums? But at the end of the day, you know, what you need to realize is that 95, maybe even more than that, percent of these cases, they settle out of court. So with the right team, you're going to recover your loss. You're going to be able to protect your investment. And so what's the takeaway here, right? Why does any of this really matter to you? You know, and I think we talked about it a lot, but damage valuation isn't a formula. It's a process. It's a blend of art and science conducted by someone who's qualified. Someone whose only full-time job it is appraising aircraft. Appraisers who moonlight as brokers or acquisition consultants. You got to understand they risk substantial conflicts of interest and breach of professional standards. It is a breach of USPAP, which is the Uniform Standards for Professional Appraisers, to have a vested interest in the property that they're appraising. So if your broker's selling your airplane and then trying to tell you what the damage assessment is, I would get a second opinion. So, you know, at the end of the day, this work is a specialty. It's a niche within a niche. There are so few people who are qualified to take on this level of analysis, you know, so take opinions from those who have a vested interest in your aircraft with a grain of salt, right? And when you're dealing with an aircraft worth millions of dollars or even hundreds of thousands of dollars, getting it wrong isn't just a rounding error. It's a major mistake with no second chance, right? So once you sign that release, you are done. That's why banks, insurance companies, attorneys, and aircraft owners trust VREF, because we don't rely on shortcuts. We don't, you know, use any quick formulaic approaches to getting this stuff done. We use data, we use a methodology that's tried and trusted, and we have experience. And that's how we protect our clients. So if you want to hear more of these war stories, make sure you hit the subscribe button. And if you're dealing with damage right now, reach out to us at VREF. We can help you get it done right the first time. Give me a call, send me an email. I'm Jason Zilberbrand, and this is The Truth About the Market.